Hello and welcome to the Disney Magic Hour, episode number 159. On this week's show, we are going to review 1980s Popeye. To my left, as always, is Melissa. Say hello, Melissa.
Hello, Melissa.
And joining us via Skype from the Main Street Gazette is none other than Ryan Wilson. Say hello, Ryan.
Hello, Ryan.
And special guest star joining us today is Shelley Duvall. Say hello, Shelley Duvall.
Hello, I'm Shelley Duvall.
Okay, thank
hello,
you.
I'm Shelley Duvall.
Very well.
Hello, I'm Shelley Duvall. Hello, I'm Shelley Duvall.
Miss Duvall.
Hello, I'm Shelley Duvall. Hello,
nope.
I'm Shelley Duvall.
Nope, keep still going.
I'm Shelley Duvall. Hello.
Loved you in The Shining.
I'm Shelley Duvall. Hello, I'm Shelley Duvall.
That, yep.
Hello, I'm Shelley Duvall.
We know.
Hello, I'm Shelley Duvall.
Who are you?
Hello, I'm Shelley Duvall.
What does it rhyme
Hello,
with?
Hello, I'm Shelley Duvall.
Very
Hello,
well.
I'm Shelley Duvall. Hello.
Miss Duvall.
I'm Shelley Duvall.
We have to start
Hello,
the show.
I'm Shelley Duvall. Hello, I'm Shelley Duvall.
Yep,
Hello,
we know.
I'm Shelley Duvall. Hello, I'm Shelley Duvall.
Oh, she has short hair
Hello,
now.
I'm Shelley Duvall.
And she appears Hello, behind trees.
I'm Shelley Duvall. Hello.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I'm Shelley Duvall.
Hello, Shelley Duvall.
I'm Shelley Duvall. Hello.
She looks like Moses.
I'm Shelley Duvall.
All right, well, thanks for joining us. That was Shelley Duvall. Guys, she left. That was it. So I want to thank Shelley Duvall and her agent for setting all that up. And I want to thank Shelley Duvall and her agent for not killing all of us after saying her name roughly 33 times. One of those legitimately looked like she was Moses.
Yes.
Look up, hello, I'm Shelley Duvall. Welcome back, Ryan. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you guys?
Oh, doing good. Doing good. Is it raining near you? It is a rainy day here in Orlando.
No, it is just a cold day up here. We're in the 20s this morning, so.
Has Shelley Duvall swung by at all?
No, she was on the screen a little bit yesterday, but that was about as much as I've seen of her.
She's quite gracious. When you do see her, be assured that she will introduce herself in a kindly manner.
For a number of times.
For a number of times. Oh, who are we? We are LastGenPodcast.com. You can find us on Twitter for at Diz Magic Hour Pod. That's D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. We have a Facebook group. It's called the Disney Magic Hour. If you want to go onto Facebook and join, please do. And if you're already in there, you can invite your friends. You can find this show on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, and now Spotify, which is awesome. Melissa, pictures and the Patreons, where are they?
Pictures are at Disney Magic Hour Podcast on Instagram and Patreon. If you head over to patreon.com/Disney Magic Hour, you can find ways to help keep the show going over there.
And we got to pick out a do a stream this month. Let's do that.
Yes.
And Ryan, where can everyone find you in the Main Street Gazette?
It's at mainstgazette.com. If you're looking for us on Twitter or Instagram, it's mainstgazette. And if you look for on Facebook for Main Street Gazette, you can find the page there too.
Courtney's out on assignment hunting, I don't know.
Jobs. She's hunting jobs. or moving trucks at this point, I think, is where we're
at.
Yeah,
I think it's moving trucks at this point. So.
And boxes, boxes, boxes.
Which we have a lot of. But I'm finding use for all those boxes.
Yeah, don't do all that, though.
I can do that. Cardboard is expensive. Either we're going to spend it one way or we're going to spend it another way. I need to ship the photos in something. So, I hope everyone's having a good week out there. I hope you enjoyed our last little bonus show of the Disney Oscar nominations for 2019. I want to thank Adam Corbett for coming on for that one. And we have something for you this week, though. We are back at the movies. It's been a little while since we got back on the movies, the holiday season and all that.
The holidays, we moved. Courtney's moving. It was a rough end of the year, beginning of the year.
It was.
I
wish that we had the time to list all of the things that happened in this apartment since we moved in here.
We do not.
But we do not. So we're going to jump right in. We're going to start talking about a movie that I remember fondly as a kid. You know, straight off the bat, I remember watching Popeye a lot as a kid. I was a big Popeye fan. I also loved that video game. I semi-recently tried to play that video game again. That video game is just Donkey Kong, but so much harder. Yes, Moss.
Wait, so you watched this Popeye as a kid or like the cartoon Popeye?
No, I watched this Popeye as a kid a lot.
Really?
Yeah, I watched this. This was 1980. I mean, I was 2 when it came out. But, you know, by the time you were able to like watch it on TV, you know, it was probably like 5 or 6 or something like that. And I loved it. I was a big fan of it. Ryan, did you have a Popeye in your life when you were younger?
I can remember seeing it a couple of times, but it wasn't one of the ones that was on regular rotation around my house.
Okay. Well, maybe it has to do with the fact that it was released on December 6th, which is the day before my birthday, 1980, which is not the same year I was born, but whatever. So it was released on December 6th, 1980. It clocks in at a brisk-ish 114 minutes, and it was on a budget of $20 million. It actually made $60 million worldwide, so this is a financial success, which I know it has the reputation of not being that, but... Yeah. It's a misguided reputation. It actually made quite a bit of money, especially for that time.
I feel like it's like a theme, though, with Disney, like especially recently, because it's like even like their big movies like Solo and stuff that makes money, they're just like, it didn't do what we wanted to do, so it's a flop.
Yeah, but this tripled its budget. You know, Solo didn't triple its budget.
No,
I don't
but its
believe.
Budget was also like what?
Yes, that's crazy. The thing. Yeah, that brings it much more into it. Also. Press now marketing is so much more expensive than it was back
yes.
in the day. That's actually sometimes you can get films where their press, their marketing budget is higher than the actual shooting budget.
Yes.
So the way that this came about, though, was that Paramount had actually lost a bidding war for the music adaptation of Annie. Learning of this, producer Robert Evans, who previously produced Chinatown, Marathon Man, which if you never saw Marathon Man, you should see it, and then you'll find out whether or not it is, in fact, safe. Is it safe? The Two Jakes, which is a follow-up to Chinatown, and even executive produced The Godfather 1 and 2. Not credited, but was a producer on the film. So he started inquiring about other comic strip outlets that they could nail down the rights for to do their own musical. Popeye was brought up, and pretty much that's how that gets started. Turns out that Paramount actually owned the film rights for it because they were releasing the cartoons that were made from the Fleischer Studio and Famous Studio way back. Fleischer, a bit of a rival for Walt Disney back in the day. And if you ever want to look up Fleischer Superman, straight up incredible looking cartoons back from the days. I would say the Monster Men was one of the most, or the Mechanical Monster. It's just classic. That's the one where Superman stops the lava from hitting Lois with his cape. I've just seen that image a lot more around. So we need a director for this film, as all films do. And Robert Altman winds up being the person behind the camera. Now, Robert Altman, up to this point, had directed MASH, The Long Goodbye, with Elliot Gould, and Nashville in 75, which was nominated for Best Picture. He would later in his career direct The Player, Gosford Park, Prairie Home Companion, which would be his last. That was in 2006. He was nominated 5 times for Best Director. Never won, though. But he got this pick. Evans, not his initial pick, mind you. But Robert Evans picks him because he's hoping that he can control him a bit. Because even after the success of Nashville, Altman's at a bit of a slump right now. Even though the movies that came in between, I think Three Women were one of them, they would later be like highly regarded. They weren't making money, so he actually kind of puts him in thinking that he has him backed into a corner, and that's totally not what happens because this is a Robert Altman film like from top to bottom. So Evans and him actually clashed a lot during the production. They even supposedly threw hands at each other. Drugs were kind of a commonplace, according to reports on the set. And just for just a little history on it, the set of Sweetwater, it was built for this film. It's still there. It's actually still there.
Where?
I forget where it was originally. Where was
Malta?
It? Thank you. And they do tours there called Popeye Town.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah. Robin Williams actually used to refer to this movie, though, as Stalag Altman, which is a reference to the 50s comedy drama Stalag 17, which is about World War II prisoners breaking out of a German POW camp. There's a really great Stalag 17 reference in Chicken Run also. Just totally off the page on that one. And we're going to get into it in just one second. You know what? I'll hold on to that, actually. Cinematography in here was done by Giuseppe Rotuno, whose resume is just tremendous, quite honestly. The Adventures of Baron Munchausen, Fellini's Amarcord, All That Jazz with Roy Scheider, The Leopard with Burt Lancaster. That's actually semi-recently available on Blu-ray with Criterion. Also did more recent ones-ish, quote, regarding Henry Wolfe and the 95 remake of Sabrina with Harrison Ford and Julia Ormond. Not that bad, actually. So we have players in place from the top of the list. But Ryan, we need a story. And where does that all come into play?
So that comes into play with Evans tapping Jules Pfeiffer in 77 to start a script for this. And Jules Pfeiffer he's still around, but he had an amazing career. He wrote with Will Eisner on The Spirit. Mm. He did a ton of plays. He wrote the screenplay for Carnal Knowledge with Mike Nichols. So you have a grade A writer, and even you talk to Will Eisner, and Will Eisner said, he wasn't a great cartoonist. Even though he has a Pulitzer Prize for editorial cartooning, he wasn't a great cartoonist, but he had a great way of getting dialogue and getting words that regular people would speak in conversation with. He loved how he was writing, and then that turned into this storied play and stage and film career, which leads us to Popeye, where he picked up, the works of E.C. Sager's Popeye to create a live action version, which is what we get today.
Yeah, yes, it is. And that's very faithful to a lot. A lot of times you can put this movie to a comic strip and be like, yeah, that's what this is, which is not expected, I don't think. I don't think anyone was really expecting that, although maybe asking for it in another sense. So we have story. We have directors, we have cameras. Melissa, do we have a cast, though? I mean, I mentioned one of them, obviously.
We do.
Already. But what do we have there for casting?
We have an extensive list, so I just picked out kind of like the main players.
Yeah, good idea.
Yeah.
This is too many people.
Because there's a lot of people in that town. but we'll start with the main one. This is actually the first movie that I've watched since he's passed, which was kind of weird. But I think I need to give myself a lot of breathing time. We, of course, have Popeye being played by Robin Williams. He was in a bajillion things, but I just picked out a few. Of course, you'll know him as Genie from Aladdin. He also did voice work for Ferngully at Robots at Happy Feet, which I was super happy about because, I mean, Genie and Ferngully alone were my childhood animated films. That's a really actually good movie. I don't
mind. Is that Ewan McGregor? He does the other voice of the robot in that, right?
Yeah, there's a bunch of people in that one. It's really actually pretty good. He also was Dr. No in AI, which I thought was an interesting casting. Yeah. He was, of course, the timekeeper from the attraction that was in Disneyland Paris, Tokyo Disneyland, and I think it came to Walt Disney World for a bit.
It was there, yeah.
Of course, Mork and Mindy, if you are my age, you probably watched it at Nick at Night because that's how I ate that show up along with many others, which was probably my first introduction to Robert Williams. He was in Good Morning Vietnam, little great movie ride shout out. Mrs. Doubtfire, of course, The Birdcage, Good Will Hunting, Jumanji, among many others. But those are my highlights.
Yeah, you could go on for another half hour pretty much. Yeah.
So we'll move on. We'll move on to his partner in crime, Olive Oil, played by, of course, Miss Shelley Duvall.
Hello.
I love that her mother nicknamed her Manic Mouse. I thought was appropriate for this. She was also in a ton. She was in Three Women, Annie Hall, The Shining, Portrait of a Lady. She was, of course, in Shelley Duvall's Fairy Tale Theater, which is where I think we get most of the hellos.
That's awful, all of them.
Because she was riding a horse in one of them, so I'm hoping it was from a fairy tale.
That's where all of them are from. It's phenomenal.
I did think it was interesting that they listed this here for under her as Shelley Duvall's Fairy Tale Theater, but other actors that appeared in that, they just call it Fairy Tale Theater.
Well, that's actually two different things.
No.
Are you sure it's not Bedtime Stories and Fairy Tale Theater?
No, that's... those are two different things, yeah.
Okay.
But on other actors' creds, if they call it Fairy Tale Theater, I looked at it and it was, then the image was Shelley Duvall's Fairy Tale Theater, but they just named it that.
I used to own all of them on cassette. The Boy Who Left Home and Found Out About the Shivers, that actually has Christopher Lee in it. It's really good.
That's a long title.
Yeah, it is a long title. Yeah, it is.
And of course, just one quick shout out for her voiceover work. She did do an episode of Ah, Real Monsters, which I loved. And if you've never seen that, that's a really good show too. All right, now we'll go on to Bluto, who looked really familiar, but I didn't find many creds to his name. He was played by Paul L. Smith. He definitely was in Midnight Express, Maverick, Dune, and 21 Hours at Munich. But while there's a lot there, there's a lot of TV stuff, and there's a lot that I couldn't really, it didn't really hit my radar as like, oh, this is a movie that Pete's talked about. So I'm not really sure if he just looked really familiar or what the deal was.
I think, I mean, I remember him in from The In-Laws, actually, with Peter Falk and Alan Arkin, which actually that also just came out recently on Criterion. Criterion's releasing a lot of stuff right now. It's actually starting to become really hard to keep up with them. He's got that face.
Yeah.
Haunted Honeymoon also he was in, which is something that I watched a lot as a kid. A whole lot as a kid. And guess what? It ain't that good. But I used to watch it a ton. Haunted Honeymoon. Really good. Wilder and Radner both deserve better, though, quite frankly. All right. Who else we got here?
We have to talk about Wimpy because yes. It can't be a Popeye show without Wimpy. He is played by Paul Dooley. I think you'll most famously know him as Sarge from the Cars films, which I thought was quite interesting. He was also in 16 Candles. He was also in Hairspray in 2007, Breaking Away. He did a lot of TV. He did Grace Under Fire, Star Trek, Deep Space Nine, and My So-Called Life were the big ones.
Oh, God, he's Cheryl's dad in Curb Your Enthusiasm. That's right. Oof, love looking through these lists. Sorry.
So that was our Wimpy. We'll go on to Giesel, who... He was around a lot, but he wasn't like, I don't think he was like named a lot. But George Giesel, he was the dark-haired, long, dark beard man. He's played by Richard Libertini. I have to mention him because he plays Dijon in a lot of the DuckTales and the shows and DuckTales movie. So already have our Disney connection there. He was also in Fletch, The In-Laws. He was in Days of Heaven, which I thought you would like because I know you love that movie.
I do love that movie.
He was the vaudeville leader, which I thought his look was very appropriate for that. And of course, he did do two episodes of Shelley Duvall's Fairy Tale Theater.
Hello.
We'll go on to a character that kind of shows up later in the movie, but he's also very famous. We got our Pappy, Poop Deck Pappy, played by Ray Walston. He was in Fast Times at Ridgemont High, The Sting, Paint Your Wagon, South Pacific, Damn Yankees, The Apartment, The Player, Of Mice and Men. Most famously, though, I think he is well known for his role as My Favorite Martian on TV. He was also in the Stand TV miniseries and Picket Fences, a TV series that ran for a few years in the 90s.
So, like, I agree with you. The thing I would say he's most known for is the, you know, My Favorite Martian. But he was such a good actor.
Yeah.
And it's such a weird thing to be the one that everyone will, like, focus in on. But that's, you know, it was an incredibly popular show. And he was, you know, that's what kind of made him. So, but yeah, I just thought that his resume is just very varied. Vast and varied.
Yeah. And a lot of the stuff that he was in sometimes, it was just, like, little parts. So I didn't include all of it. Speaking of little parts, we have our little Sweet Pea, played by Wellesley Ivan Hurt. I found that this was the only IMDb cred for him.
Yeah, this was it. This burned him out.
So he had a really stressful time on the movie and decided never to go back into acting.
This is the grandson of Robert Altman. Yeah,
What happens when you work for your grandfather.
Yeah, grandfather's pushing you to the edge.
I wonder how he got paid.
An olive oil.
Baby oil.
Baby oil was fun. That's the best joke in the whole damn movie. That it's did a really crack good you up. Joke. I laughed for a while about that one.
You did. We also have Castor Oil. He's played by Donovan Scott. This was Olive Oil's brother. You'll know him for Police Academy. He was also in The Wonderful World of Disney and Splash 2 as a character called Freddy Bauer. I've never seen Splash 2, but I just thought it was interesting.
I've never watched Splash 2 either. Ryan, have you watched Splash 2?
If I did, it was like the Saturday afternoon, like matinee on television thing. Like I have no recollection of it really.
I just love they call it, it's Splash TOO.
Oh yeah, he was in a bunch of fairy tale theaters though.
Yeah.
Look at that.
He did a few of those as well. He was in Back to the Future 3 and Psycho 3, which I thought was kind of fun.
One of those is not as good as the other. Yeah. I'll leave it up to you.
We have his mother, Nana Oil, played by Roberta Maxwell. She had a little part in The Changeling. She was in Philadelphia, Dead Man Walking, The Postman, and Brokeback Mountain.
Which I think it broke out, and she only appears at the last couple of scenes because I think that's when we meet his mother and father, Jack's mother and father.
Yeah, she didn't have big roles, but
yeah,
she's
but
still been acting.
That's
for
a very
while.
Important. Man, that movie's really something.
Yeah, and of course we have the dad, Cole Oil. he was in Batteries Not Included, A River Runs Through It. It's kind of a funny story. Funny Farm, Monsters, and The Dream Team.
And they really leaned on that. He owes me an apology line. They dug their heels in on that one.
Yeah, for a bit. And we have to mention the Taxman because he ran through the beginning of that movie for a while. Played by Donald Moffat. Probably the most famous thing that Pete loves him for. He was Gary from The Thing.
Yes.
He was also in Clear and Present Danger as the president, and he was in The Right Stuff.
Everyone needs to watch The Right Stuff if you haven't seen it. I don't know, whatever you're doing right now, just stop. Which I guess would be listening. You know, you can listen to it afterwards. Don't worry about it.
I do have one other actor and character on here. I'm not sure how much time we meet him because we didn't catch a lot of the other people's names. But he was definitely in this movie, and I want to mention him. It was Ham Gravy, played by Bill Irwin. You might know him from a few things, but... If you have children and you've watched any Sesame Street or Elmo movies, you'll know him as the voice of Mr. Noodle. He was in How the Grinch Stole Christmas with Jim Carrey as Lulu Who. He was in Lady in the Water as Mr. Leeds. He was in Legion. And, of course, he was Tars from Interstellar.
Yeah, that's the one that sticks out for me.
I also thought it was interesting. He was also the director for Frozen on Broadway First Look.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Frozen on Broadway First Look was like a TV special?
Yeah, like the Disney like First Look things. They have a lot of those things.
How about that?
Yeah.
How about that? Just a couple of little extra notes on the cast things. Toys Robin Williams, not the first choice. First choice was Dustin Hoffman with Lily Tomlin as Olive Oil, which I can definitely see Lily Tomlin as Olive Oil. The Hoffman thing is a little harder, but that's why he's an actor. Gilda Radner was another hopeful for the role of Olive Oil, but then they found someone who looked exactly like Olive Oil.
Yeah, you can't really.
Also, Gilda was kind of warned off of this movie.
Yeah.
Because of both, you know, Altman and Evans, like her agent was like, that's going to be a battle and you don't want to be any part of that.
Yeah. So yeah, her agent was 100% spot on. I mean, it's crazy, but yeah, they had that marked out. From the very beginning. When it was released, this movie was actually pretty split on reviews, but Siskel and Ebert really liked it. Of all the people, like Siskel and Ebert really, really liked it. I don't think they were Roger and Ebert yet. This was too early for that yet. But Siskel did say that the first 30 minutes are pretty useless and that it only starts working when Sweet Pea shows up to give the character something to do / care about.
Yeah.
Not as kind to the movie is a man who, in my head, everyone sees as more kindly, Leonard Maltin. Leonard Maltin, straight up, quote, astonishingly boring movie. Which is not Leonard Maltin-ish. So he, obviously, not a big fan of this one when he saw it, to give such a strong review. Do we have anything else we want to talk about on the production notes? Ryan, you got anything extra in there?
No, I'm thinking good, unless we want to talk about music for a second.
Oh, yeah, music. Duh, yes, we have musicals. So, Ryan, why don't you start us into the forest known as the music, which normally is Courtney's thing. Sorry about that.
It is normally Courtney's stuff, so you're going to have to forgive all of us for butchering her segment. But the songs are done by Harry Nilsson, who was, you know, a big musical act in the 60s, 70s, 80s. He has things that appear in Reservoir Dogs, The Fisher Kings, Wonder Years, Growing Pains. There's some stuff that shows the songs. Some of the songs from this movie actually end up showing up again in Punch Drunk Love. He has music in Goodfellas. Like, so he has a... He's more of a musician. He's more of a musical act that they tapped to do the songs for this movie.
Yeah, and I guess most famously, if you just want to say, like, what's a song that I would know? Everybody's Talking At Me. Everybody's Talking At Me. I would say that would be, like, the touchstone.
That's probably the one that you would recognize, yeah.
Yeah. So, also, maybe one of the first times I ever heard this man's name and not realizing what it was is the little drummer boy skit that they do with David Bowie and Bing Crosby. Because Bing asks him, well, what kind of music are you into? And he's like, oh, I like, you know, the old timers, John Lennon, Harry Nilsson. And then Bing says, you go back that far. So that I knew that line, but didn't know who the second person was for my youthen.
It's worth noting that the I'm Popeye the Sailor Man was not his song originally. That's the original Sammy Lerner song. So
that song holds up. I'm going to say right now. That song. That's such a great song. Anyways, you want to talk about the movie now?
Yeah.
Do you have anything else, Melissa?
I thought it was interesting. Nilsson did do an album called Nilsson Sings Newman, and it was kind of pre-Randy Newman being big, and I thought it was really interesting. He kind of picked out Newman's sound and kind of liked it, and then...
Was that pre him being big?
According to Wikipedia.
Yeah, okay. All right. Take that with a grain of salt.
Yeah, so...
So the thing is, take in all of these elements, right? You have Robin Williams, very, very popular through TV and all that at this point. You have Shelley Duvall, who I want to say earlier in that year appeared in The Shining, you know. And she was also in Altman's films, who Altman, you know, was a big celebrated, you know, young director at this point, despite a couple of slump films in between. You have Nilsson doing the music. You have the cinematographer from a Fellini film, for God's sake. There's a lot of big elements into this movie. And then the movie actually comes out to a very lukewarm reception. But we're going to now start talking about the film itself, what we thought of it. And of course, we're going to get eventually to our three questions, but that's later on. Very cool little opening here. Where we actually see the old cartoon opening, complete with original voice of Popeye. And this sort of reminded me of Richard Donner's Superman, which came out just a couple of years before this. And I wondered if there was any sort of influence on that. But we get a look at Sweet Haven. It's a hell of a set. I mean, they really built a cool set. It looks like it's lived in. There's a lot of big sight gags when you're going through the first movie, through the first scene. I remember there's one guy in particular, I forget who it was. He's just like, everyone's trying to hide from Popeye. So Popeye's the outsider, and no one likes an outsider. They're all nervous about him. One guy hides behind a pole.
Yeah, that was pretty good. It was so cartoon-like. You can tell where they were getting their inspiration from. I thought the costuming, though, was really interesting because, like, they straight up took, like, the big shoes and, like, the oversized clothes. So I tried to see if it was nominated. It wasn't. But I think, like, the costume design was definitely should be called out because it was really quite good.
Yeah, so we get a whole, you know, feel of the town. Very, you know, I guess if you want to say Beauty and the Beast bellish. We get sort of a feeling of this town through this whole song.
If we want to.
And again, there's a ton of just little gags. You know, when Popeye walks by a barbershop, four guys come out and say, trouble, 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 trouble. So, like, there's just these little sort of jokes. And one joke in particular that comes right at the end, and this is just a hidden bit of dialogue. We're going to actually get into the dialogue thing in just a moment. You hear two voices, a woman and a man, say, don't forget to put out the cat, dear. And the response is, we don't have a cat. Which, I don't know why, but it made me laugh really hard. I was like, that's really stupid. I really liked it. You will notice, I think unmistakably, Robin Williams's dialogue, not a lot of it is actually done on the set. That entire opening is all ADR. Which this is now an Altman thing. So Altman likes crosstalk. He's not, you know, big on, hey, everything that we say has to be totally clear. He's, I guess, really, Chris Nolan is from the schooling of that idea because he uses that in his films a lot. But I don't know. You know where you're at with this movie right away. Ryan, how did the opening of this movie kind of strike you?
It did serve me as almost Beauty and the Beast-ish. Like, you had that, okay, I'm getting the lay of the land. I kind of understand where the bigger set pieces, you know, because you can see here's a boarding house, here's a restaurant, here's, you know, the lookout tower, here's the church. Like, you kind of get a lay of the land real quick. So you kind of, so as you're going through the movie, you're going to know where you are at any given time.
Yeah, you're given your geography. You're given, you know, what the whole town sort of falls under, like, one category of, you know, terrified of outsiders and all that kind of stuff. You know, we understand that Bluto kind of rules in with an iron fist. And if you don't get that, you'll get that shortly after when the nighttime scene comes around. Mm-hmm. This movie really does set itself up in a very effective manner. And once Popeye is looking for a place to stay, and he actually winds up staying with the Oils, which I believe he says the mother is a quart low. It's just, there's a lot of small dialogue that if you don't catch it, I don't know. I feel the movie loses everything that it has to offer.
Especially with Popeye.
Yeah, especially with Popeye.
He's mumbling just constantly, and it's like, wait, what did he just say? Yeah.
So did you find that distracting, or did you find it that it made you want to pay attention more, Melissa?
I found it a little distracting because it was like so jumbled, and like you had Popeye's dialogue that got ADR'd in, but then there was other people that were talking that were lower, and like I couldn't catch what everybody was saying, and it was just like very like frantic and jumbled, and I don't know, it was very off-putting for me.
Okay, so now what I would love to do now, I want to show you Robert Altman movies, because this is the Altman thing. So, all right, so I'm going to be very honest here. I forgot Robert Altman directed this, okay?
Yeah, that was obvious yesterday on Facebook.
Yeah, and I totally forgot he directed this. And while his name came up in the credits in the opening, I was typing out the header for this whole thing that I type out while we're doing the show, so I didn't see it. So the opening happens, I'm like, wow, this is weird. It's like Robert Altman made a musical. And then the dinner scene happened, and I said to Melissa, I was like, man, this is crazy. This is like a Robert Altman movie. And she was like, well, that's because he directed it. I was like, what did you just say? What? So that was like, I totally forgot that Robert Altman did this movie. And I like to watch the movie first before doing the production notes. So if you want, like if you are making a Robert Altman reel, that dinner scene after Popeye moves in, that's one of them. That is 100% what you get out of Robert Altman films. So now, Melissa, I would love to show you, I guess Gosford Park would be a really good one, because you'll also recognize a lot of people. So I want to see if it's just a stylistic thing of him that you don't like, or how it was done in this particular film of his style.
Yeah, I wonder, because, and I don't know if I was expecting something different because, you know, Popeye, but like, yeah, it was, the beginning was definitely off-putting a bit.
It being a musical, Ryan, that's a choice. That's such a choice.
Yeah, that's a choice. I don't know that I would have gone with that choice.
I'm not sure either. There's a couple that I really like, but
yeah, there are. There are a few that stand out, and then the rest of it, I'm like, yeah, I could have done without that.
Now, So we have our opening one, which I actually think is pretty good. And then we have Everything is Food. Everything is food, food, food. I actually think this is really good.
Yeah, this is what I like. This is one of the ones, and it establishes certain characters you didn't get introduced to originally. It's a fun fun song to play with, but it is. It's one of the ones that I'm like, okay, great. And then I'm like, I don't need the rest of it.
Oh, I like that one. Melissa, were you into the first two music parts, the first two songs?
I felt like the first one, like, it was like half song. So like it was a
little
weird.
A lot of people are talk singing.
Yeah, so yes. It was a little weird. Yes. That's why when that happened, I was like, I didn't know it was like a true musical, like, or attempting
just to
be.
People were talking over music.
I was like, what is going on? I was very confused by the opening. But the food, food, food one, it did. It had a good beat. I thought it was interesting how you always got, like, Bluto's growl every time they, like, went up to him. It was, like, distinctly an animal growling that they put over that.
It's really well thought out.
It is. It's
really well thought out. I liked it.
It's good. It's just, yeah. It took me a while to get, I guess, acclimated to the fact that it was a musical.
I will gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today. I mean, the fact that they got that line into and it fits so well.
And then they echo it, and as they're taking the burger away from it.
None of those burgers look good, number one. No. Also, who puts mustard on a burger, you monsters? No. Only mustard on a burger, which is crazy people. So our setup is that olive oil is supposed to get nominated. It's supposed to get, sure. It's supposed to get engaged to Bluto.
For the fourth time.
For the fourth time, yeah. So we cut to olive oil getting ready with her sisters. I've never actually understood who those people are.
I thought they were like towns girls.
Just towns girls? Okay.
Yeah, I think it's just, yeah.
They're the Babettes of this town.
Maybe they're going to be like her bridesmaids at some point or something.
I guess. They seem terrible friends, but yeah, that fits. Shelley Duvall. Again, Shelley Duvall. Hello. How could you?
They're listed as the Steinettes. There's four of them. They're listed as the Steinettes.
Sure. Does that make
sense? Mina, Minna, Mona, and Blossom Waffler.
You know what? Yeah. All right.
There you go.
That might be the most 70s-ass thing in this entire film right there is the naming of those folks. we meet Olive Oil. We met her in the opening scene, but now Olive Oil has a number. Large. This is a song I remember immensely as a kid because of the Steinettes' responses. He's got money. You can have him.
Yeah.
Again, it's a musical that doesn't really sound like a song, but it clearly is a song. It's such an odd vibe, but I find it really good. Like, it grabs my attention. Melissa.
Yes.
Large. What do you think about Large?
It was interesting. I also didn't know what she was doing. Like, initially I thought she was putting stuff away because she didn't want people to see. And then you eventually get oh no, she's packing up because she's going to bounce.
Yeah, she's ready to get out of there. And Bluto shows up at the house. And again, just there's a really good amount of great physical comedy throughout the film, without question. And Bluto is obviously feared by everyone. But Jesus, Shelley Duvall is perfect as Olive Oil.
She really is.
I mean, Ryan, how could you have possibly found a better Olive Oil?
You couldn't. She was literally born to play that role.
That's so weird.
From minute one, you can talk about anything else about the movie. You got it right with Shelley Duvall. Like, that was the only person who could have ever played that role.
Did anyone else notice, and you see him in the scene, and you saw him in the opening scene, and he's throughout the entire movie, there's a reappearing hobo that just pokes his head in the windows and kind of looks around corners, and he's in the very distant background of shots, just sort of legitimately looking up as if looking at the camera being what the hell is that? he's throughout the movie, but he's sort of striped shirt guy. What's his name? You got to find him. Waldo.
Oh, okay.
He's a Waldo, but in brown clothes and just sort of blends in. But he's even in the house scenes. It's really, really weird. It's funny, though. I kept noticing it. And I'm like, wow, they're really dedicated to this bit, too.
And I wonder if he was a character that was more well-known from either the cartoon or the comics that
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the origin of it. Yeah.
Because again, the clothing design, I feel they were very faithful to the old style. So if it was a reoccurring character that you were used to seeing in the comics, you'd know oh, okay, that's, so-and-so.
So our setup now is, okay, so Olive Oil, during the Large song, escapes out the window.
No, she just walks out the door.
I thought she walked out the window. She climbed out the window.
No, it's out the door. There's doors and stairways from every room in that house.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Maybe my brain just said she must be climbing out a window. Anyways.
Because she had this huge basket and a piece of luggage and just was still singing and walking out. It was really funny.
He's got money. Love it. I gotta get that out of my head right now. All right, so she absconds. She's out. And Popeye's actually out there, too, because he initially was going to go to the engagement, but as soon as he walks in, because he's an outsider, Everyone is just silent and like doesn't look at him and doesn't talk to him. You only hear like little murmuring at the most. So he knows he's not welcome and he turns around and he leaves.
Sad. Which was so sad.
When the fur barks at you, you know you're not welcome.
That fur barking is such a good bit.
It's so weird because it's like it tries to take itself seriously and then it has things like that.
Wait a minute. When did it to take itself seriously?
And maybe it didn't take itself seriously. I meant like it looks serious, like in terms of like there's not bright colors. It doesn't look like a cartoony thing. You know, it looks like a movie, but then it plays like a cartoon. It's weird.
Now that you bring it up, I think the only super bright color in the entire movie comes in the last 30 seconds of the movie when Bluto is swimming away in that yellow suit, which is a really good visual.
I think Sweet Pea has like a red thing on.
That's right. That's right.
Some of the red olive oil stuff and comes through.
Yeah, on her too. But she always pairs it with like black stuff, so it's downplay a little bit.
Yeah.
So out olive oil goes. She bumps into Popeye, who's out there too. They have a lot of physical comedy of going this way, which way. And they eventually, you know, he agrees to help her. I'm going to carry you big. I can't do that.
Whoa.
I mean, yeah. I always see watching those scenes, that must have been so hard to do on a set. Because with the editing, it looks like, yes, they're going back and forth, you know, this and that. But in the actual physicality of doing that, you are literally just like turning on a dime, going another direction, twisting your feet up. But that's the cartoon. Like, that's olive oil in the cartoon. So it's very, it's an odd visual with human beings, but it also makes perfect sense with what this film is supposed to be. But they're humans. So that's the thing. That's just the thing. So they're going to run out. But then fate intervenes. Actually, I really don't know how the hell she was getting off that place. But anyways, fate intervenes. And while they're sitting down talking, somebody switches her big basket with another basket. This basket keeping a child within it.
A baby.
And also this person meant it to be left for Popeye. So this is sort of actually where one of the parts of the plot that I may have missed. Are we supposed to know who that was?
No, it just, I mean, that's the thing. Like, they're totally covered. They drop the baby. It's left for, you know, it's left from a mudda. And then it's never referenced really again. Like,
so do we want to maybe make the assumption that his mother did live in that town? She saw him, noticed him. And then felt comfortable giving him another baby? Or maybe it was his sister or something like that. I don't know. Am I supposed to make a connection to who the hell that person was? That's really what I'm asking.
I don't think so, because they don't really give you much to go on.
But she does talk like him. That's the thing, you know? There's that, the fact that she calls herself like Mudda. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get it. But I don't know.
I don't think so. But I find that very strange. So, anyways, though, we finally have something put into the movie, that gives our characters something to kind of connect upon. So this is really the beginning of the Popeye and olive oil relationship. But when they go back home, because now they can't run off to the middle of nowhere with this baby. They go back and Bluto gets upset. He's not happy.
He literally sees red.
Yeah, he sees red. One of the cooler shots in the whole film.
Yeah.
The really, really cool shot. They actually change out all the costuming just for that one shot. And I think it's really done well. So Bluto, you know, winds up destroying the house. Well, he did that kind of slightly before, but then he winds up going after Olive's family and ruining them because he controls the taxman. So he basically has the taxman throw a ton of taxes on top of them, and they're pretty much going to be poor. So now we have our conflict in the movie is that this family is about to be broken. They need some money fast, and they have a baby in the mix. This is where the movie sort of really starts going. We're probably about 20, 25 minutes into it. Ryan, are you on board at this point?
I think I may have taken a nap at one point at this point and I had to go back and back it up a little bit. I think I fell asleep twice during this movie and had to back it up when I was watching it. No, I was. I'm waiting for something to kick in, and once Sweet Pea arrives, once you get the Bluto's "I Mean" song, and he destroys the house, and at that point, I'm like, okay, we got a little bit more going on now, and so I'm cautiously waiting for like what the next step is. By the way, don't look up Sweet Pea's history because it's so convoluted; it's not even funny.
What, like, of who it's supposed to be?
Well, like at one point, it was Olive Oil's nephew. At some point, he's apparently royalty and becomes a crown prince.
Sure.
Like, it's just, it's chaos.
That sounds right.
Melissa, what about you?
Yeah, it definitely took a while to get to this point. I know, like, they had to, especially, like, if you didn't know any of the Popeye characters, like, they had to introduce you to, like, a few of them. And, you know, they needed to make the Wimpy reference because you can't have Popeye without Wimpy. But it definitely took a while to get the setup going. And while I enjoyed Popeye and Olive Oil's little dance along the pier or whatever that was, like,
it could have been a little shorter.
Yeah, it was definitely like extended. Yeah. And I was like, and like, but I thought it was funny because like you do get like the feeling of like, okay, Olive Oil's in this town. She's obviously like part of the privileged people of the town because she, you know, and Bluto have a relationship. So like she doesn't necessarily fit in their relationship. I mean, she doesn't fit as part of the town. Like she's not constantly being harassed by the tax man. So yeah. Like she doesn't know like where to go or what to do. Like she doesn't really have a viable escape option. Like she can't get on a boat and go anywhere, but she wants to get out because obviously they make mention like this is the fourth time she's getting engaged to Bluto. So she really doesn't necessarily want to be engaged or married to him, but like he's got money and, you know,
he's got money,
treats her well by like not taxing her family. So like she probably knows.
What is their relationship? Like, do they go on dates? Do you think they go on dates?
They probably go get food.
You think so?
Probably.
At the old, the rough house?
Yeah. So yeah, it was interesting.
Great pair. Oh, sorry, Ryan. Yes.
I was going to say, so that's where we got another pop of color there which is a great gag of he sees Olive Oil, he sees Popeye, he sees Sweet Pea, and literally everybody's wearing red at that point. Like the walls are red.
Yeah, that's everything's red. Like, was saying, yeah.
It was a good joke. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really good pop. And also, I like the whole flower bit.
Oh, when he's walking
around. Caster, well, like when he loses, he forgets what he's doing when he's pulling the flowers. And it's going to be, sure, marry me. But he loses. Yeah, I forget what distracts him exactly. But he goes back, and Caster's like, she won't marry you. She. And, you know, whoa. So Caster's really good in this. He's really effective in this. And while we're out on the pier, I think we get the best joke of the movie. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It happens after that. So it happens after, you know, the house is in ruin. And we have a really actually tender moment with the mother and the father where the house is being taken away by Moffat because that's what he does. And she's like, put away that newspaper. And he's actually crying.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, wow, it's a really like dramatic moment just sort of right in the middle of this.
But then they cartoon it up by like it's extra tears. Like it's been like water.
Yeah, it's good. It's like good big tears. Yeah. Shortly after this, we get what I thought was the best joke in the film when they're trying to figure out the name of the kid.
Yeah.
And he says, you want me to call him Baby Oil? And I don't know why, but set me off. Really did. Really worked for me. In so many ways, that really worked for me. Hope, though, comes to Castor Oil, at least, when he learns that there's going to be an open boxing challenge in the town. From Ox Blood, Ox Heart, which I assume is a name from the cartoons. That is a really good name.
That is a very 30s name.
Like. Yeah, it's a strong, good name. but the payoff is that they get a bunch of money and they get 15 days of no taxes. I like that was one of the other big prizes from this thing. So Caster's going to go in there and try to save the family. So again, Caster's one of the best characters in this movie. Like you really pull for him.
Yeah, he's definitely, like, they initially, I think, set him up to be like, oh, he's just going to be constantly bickering with Olive Oil, like at the dinner scene. But then he's like, you know, he's actually genuine and cares about his family, cares about Olive Oil. Like, he does care. So it was good. I was glad they didn't make him like also like, I don't know.
Well, I guess they leave that to Wimpy. Like, Wimpy is the real undercutter of the family.
Yeah.
Even though I never thought of Wimpy that way, I guess, for my history of watching the comic and...
He just always
seems harmless.
Yeah,
he always seems harmless.
He's a real spineless son of a bitch. This one,
yeah, he's a grifter. He's a good grifter.
Yeah, he gets people in a lot of trouble in this movie. And so anyway, so Castor goes and tries to fight Oxblood and gets nearly murdered. He literally gets kicked out of the ring in what, again, great visual gag. Like, it all looks really good.
And, like, the whole time all this is going on, like, Shelley Duvall's just always kind of, like, in the background, like, I'm gonna fight you. Like, that's all I could hear is just her, like, high-pitched, like,
yeah, her little yipping.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a show dog in the background. Like, go get him. She could have voiced Mickey Mouse. Something that, like, stuck in my head for a bit. But, of course, he doesn't win. But then Popeye jumps in the ring, legitimately actually jumps in the ring, and changes clothes from one shot to the next. Another, just, this movie understands what it is. There's no illusion that it's something else than exactly what it is.
And this is probably where you get one of, like, the most cartoony things happening, where he literally winds up his fist.
Yeah, and we get that again later in the film.
Yeah.
But yeah, we get the actual winding up of the fist. Again, looks really good. He defeats the challenger and his mother. And again, when you watch the scene, you can picture the mother in an animated form. You know, like,
well,
it's
done by Linda Hunt, who's just an amazing character actress.
Yeah, and she's from what, NCIS New Orleans?
Los Angeles, yeah. She's NCIS Los Angeles. She was Mapes in Dune. She's Grandmother Willow in Pocahontas.
Oh,
like,
wow.
She's an amazing character actress.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome.
She looks like real life Edna Mode.
She does.
Yes.
She absolutely does.
Especially,
oh my God,
NCIS.
Wait, that's her?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that. I did not realize that. Oh, yeah, there she is.
Yeah.
Sorry. This is all coming back. So come back to me now. Oh, that's crazy. Okay. Very cool. This movie's really good. Letting you
You're
know
coming
right
around.
Now. Letting you know right now. So Popeye goes up there and he wins, and it's great. But from that, again, in a really smart narrative way, from that fight, we get information from Olive that then sets the rest of the movie on its course. Olive points out that Sweet Pea predicted that Popeye would win. So she never had any doubt that he was going to win. What?
Oh, no. I was thinking previously to this when they were, like, feeding Sweet Pea and, like, he did the... Or, no, was this after? Gosh, my timeline on this movie. We watched it last night and I don't remember half of the timeline. were they feeding the baby after this?
They were feeding the baby... Well,
after this, yes.
Okay.
After
this. Well, this is also where we get, like, the whole, like... He doesn't want to eat, the baby doesn't want to eat the spinach, and Popeye kind of does the whole, like, yeah, don't feed him spinach. And, like, you get, if you don't
the
know,
movie's
like,
really
this movie,
smartly written. That's, like, what I'm telling you.
Yeah,
like,
no,
I really think that it doesn't get the respect that it should really
I think,
earns.
No, I agree with that. Cause then you get, like, the whole, like, Popeye doesn't like spinach either. And you're like, wait, what? Like, that's not Popeye lore. So,
this is origin stories.
Yeah.
This is the origin story. So she points out that Sweet Pea made a little noise. And that's how she knew that he would win. So Wimpy picks up on this, and he's like, well, that's got to be 100% accurate, as anyone would. And says, hey, I want to take this kid out for a walk. But what Wimpy actually really does is brings the kid to the horse races so he can predict the winners. And the payoff that it's a mechanical horse race is earned.
Yeah.
Wait, the best joke that's in here, though, is when Popeye stops and is like, wait, you're not going to make a fool out of me. He's a baby. He can't walk.
Yeah.
He's like, I'll carry him. And I'm like, yes, thank you. Like, that's a wonderful, like, just a throwaway.
Like, a friend of mine recently said, like, it's really hard building a house. I was like, well, you're not building it. I'm like, you hired people to build the house. You're actually not doing anything. I don't even think you own a hammer. So yeah, same vein of response to that. So Popeye and fam figure out relatively quickly after a couple hours that he must have brought him to the races. But once Olive Oil sees what Sweet Pea could do, she gets roped in.
Yeah, she's down for her.
She's just like
using the baby, the bed
machine. Which I gotta say, it doesn't seem like the worst thing in the world. Maybe don't make it so obvious that like everyone in town can figure it out, because that ultimately gets them in trouble with Bluto.
But morality.
Popeye's morality is like, you can't be using my kid for this thing. I can't do the voice at all.
His puns in this like whole thing like are really good.
I wonder how much he came up with, how much was in the script. I have a feeling it's a good balance.
Yeah.
That he threw in a lot of stuff, especially if they did a lot of ADR.
True.
Right. You know, he would have been in the booth. I wonder if they just, if he would spit out something and eventually they'd be like, you know what, this is pretty damn good. Because
I could think of his mouth not barely moving at all in the movie. So you can, he can say whatever you want. Like there are points where it almost feels like you're not, like it's like you're in Popeye's head. Like you're just hearing his stream of thought.
Yeah.
Not even that he's talking.
Yeah. And I wonder how hard on set it was, because he was constantly like gritting, keeping the pipe in his teeth. So like he probably really couldn't do much like with that.
Yeah, he just
especially
had to,
if you're trying to do like a voice.
Yeah, yeah. I would imagine it was not easy. I mean, he referred it to Stalic, so I'm assuming it wasn't great.
I wish I had written down some of the puns, because they're really good.
Yeah, there's a lot of really good ones. And then Popeye gets his own song, I Am What I Am. Probably one of the more famous ones that came out of the movie.
I am what I am, what I am.
It's a good song.
It was catchy.
It's a really good song. Actually, I think they even spell it, yeah, I am what I am.
Yeah.
It like is, I am what I am.
Yeah, really good. So Popeye's like, no, we're getting this kid out of here. So he decides to move the kid out of the oil residence on top of it. And in that thing, the taxman shows up, who's been just a pain in the ass to everyone, Moffitting. And Popeye throws him into the water, which evidently ends taxes. Is that how this works? But the whole town celebrates him for throwing this guy into the water. But as they're doing that, Wimpy, after being like, you know, pointed out in a crowd by Bluto and being told what to do, Wimpy steals Sweet Pea and delivers him to Bluto. And so then we have a very like soft, sweet song by Popeye. I forget the name of it though. Boo. As he writes a letter to his son.
Yeah, and I like this part. It calls back, you know, to how he was kind of talking about his pappy, you know, like in the very beginning. And you get the great visual gag. He's looking at the photograph of his pappy, and then he turns it around, and it just has the words like "me pappy" written on it.
Yep,
that was good.
And it gets paid off later.
It does.
Yeah, it
gets paid off later too.
So yeah,
damn it, this movie's unappreciated. I totally agree with Siskel though, Gene Siskel. the first like 25, 30 minutes, you can cut it down to like 10, and you'd probably have a better movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, but he sends him a message in a bottle. Sorry, I hate that song.
So why'd you sing it?
I don't know, because I remember working in a movie theater, and for whatever reason, that was must have been on like the music CD, and it just played forever.
Mm-hmm.
So off he writes a little letter to his son, you know, throws it in the bottle.
Oh, wait, before we get, I have to back up a little bit, because I had this written down as being really good. When they're in the horse race and Castor was there and he's like, oh, I can't let anybody know I'm here.
Oh, that's so good.
But
you're
he
right.
Had the makeup, like his makeup looked like a cartoon makeup. Like he had the little X bandage. Yeah. He had a knot, like a big bump on his head, the black eyes, like because he had gotten beaten up. But it was so like, they literally probably took an image from a comic, and the makeup artist did such a great job on it. Like, it's really, I think, underappreciated.
And that joke that they pull off in that scene where he's like, my mother sees me, she'll kill me. So he runs around, goes right behind her, and she's like, Castor, what are you doing in here? And he's like, I've been behind you the whole time. It's so good. It's such a good joke. Also, you know what? Little random thing, you made me think of it because you said the makeup. After Popeye has that row in the roughhouse with the guys who are, you know, pushing everyone around, the next scene that we see them in, they also have like the X makeup on their face. By the way, one of those guys is Dennis Franz, a very young, extremely fit Dennis Franz.
Loser.
You would know him from, what was the name of the show?
NYPD Blue.
NYPD Blue. Why do I always want to say The Shield, but that was with The Thing. NYPD Blue, Dennis Franz. You saw his ass on television. It was a really big thing. It's the first nudity, I think, was Dennis Franz's ass. It was a hot moment. But yeah, he's one of the guys in that bar. He's like their leader. What's his name? I got to look up his name. Spike. Yes, that's him. Incredible. Incredible, I tell you.
That's awesome.
So where were we? Oh, yes. So
Wimpy brings the baby to Bluto.
Yeah, it brings it. So baby Bluto, stolen away. So then we've heard about the Commodore throughout the movie, but we've never met him. And so we finally meet him, and he sort of looks a lot like Popeye.
He's got those forearms.
Yeah, and this is actually, Marvin the Martian. Wow. This is my favorite Martian. This is Ray Walson. So Bluto tries to convince the Commodore, like, hey, we can make a lot of money off this kid. But the Commodore declines and says, what do I need to do that for? I have so much in my buried treasure. So Bluto's like, good point. I should just steal your treasure. So he ties him up in a hilariously slow fashion, which I absolutely adored. now we have this being thrown into the mix.
And again, we have Pappy attempting to feed the baby spinach and not...
Yes.
The baby not...
Baby will not eat it.
But Pappy going on about how good spinach is.
Yeah.
And he hates children.
Crushing the can open, exactly how you see happens in the comics. Yeah.
So, yes, and how useless children are and things like he has a whole tirade.
Yeah, he's the smartest character.
That's his song. Yeah, his song is Kids. Yeah.
Dude, that... Okay, so when we're going to get to that. The children's song, that is the most sing-talk song maybe of all time.
Yes.
It's almost like beat poetry. Like, he's just saying, it's so good. Ah, children. It's so, so damn good. I don't care what anyone says. I'll argue with it. So now we have even further conflict. And Olive, being quite smart, is sort of spying on Wimpy and hears him muttering to himself. And she says, you said sweet pea. So she knows that he knows where the kid is. Forces him. They tell Popeye because Wimpy didn't really want to help. He was scared. You know, that's all. He was just really scared.
He's Wimpy.
Yeah. So
he wanted his hamburgers.
His hamburgers. He did. He sold out the kid for a bag of hamburgers.
Yes.
I told Melissa, I was like, I'm totally selling you for a bag of hamburgers one of these days. It's like just good hamburgers. Oh, I want a hamburger. We should go to that one spot today. I want to get a burger. And I won't pay them. Like, I will gladly pay you Tuesday, and then I'll get arrested. Because that's how that works. You can't just walk into a place
and
demand food.
They just won't give you food if you don't pay them.
It's called stealing people. It's called robbing. Anyways, so they tell Popeye and the whole fam.
Well, they all, Wimpy and Olive Oil, spy on, they figure out that Bluto has the baby, right? And they spy on...
And they figure out that it's the Commodore is like
resembles Popeye.
Yeah, Olive Oil pretty much looks at him. She's like, "Oh, that's his father."
Because
either that, or we need to get these tumors in the town looked into because these people are either related or we're all gonna die soon. So she's very smart in a very unobvious way in this movie.
Yeah,
but she puts it together. They even try to tell him, "This is your father." And he's, but he's a terrible person. He's like, not my father. My father's a saint. Whatever he says. I couldn't understand that. But off they go. The Commodore is now enslaved by Bluto. And a mighty chase ensues, which is a lot quicker than I remembered in my head. I don't know why. But yeah, Popeye and family go on. They go and ram Bluto's bloat, which sinks it. Actually, the Commodore rams it, right?
Mm-hmm. Every time
he's kidnapped.
Oh, go ahead.
He's kidnapped Olive Oil, too, in the whole exchange. They get the Commodore. He gets Olive Oil. Shoves her in a smokestack.
Yeah, Indiana Jones style.
Yep. And then, they go off and basically everyone's yelling, stop. Like, we fired the cannons. You could kill the baby or Olive Oil. And he's like, I'm going to ram him.
Yeah, this is But actually, I'm sorry, I skipped a scene before that when Popeye actually meets his father. So when Popeye goes on the boat looking for Sweet Pea, he actually does meet his father, and I think this whole scene is gold because the whole how Robin Williams turns his voice like into a child version of Popeye.
Yeah.
Once the father is trying to feed him the spinach, and you know,
no, I don't want
to. Yeah, he just completely goes into like a baby version of Popeye. I think it's great. I really do. I think it's great. All right, so I'm really in, like, at this moment. Where are you guys at?
I think I'm in maybe a little less than I was in the middle when they were doing the whole, like, Sweet Pea thing. But I thought it was really great how they, like, in one scene, Popeye's trying to convince Pappy, like, how similar they are. You know, the forearms, the winky eye, the pipe. And he's like, Pappy's like, you can't inherit a pipe. And then, like, short while later when they're on the boat, Pappy, like, figures out, okay, no, you're probably my son. And it flips. And Pappy's like, oh, yeah, no, the forearms, the eye, the pipe. And then they're like, this isn't my pipe. It's pretty good.
But doesn't he? I thought that he actually did convince him with the whole spinach thing. He still is a little denial after that?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I always took it that he kind of did buy it at that point. Ryan, how about you? Has the movie pulled you back in at all at this point?
Yeah, it's ramping up now. Like, we're getting to our big final throwdown that we've all waited, you know, the Bluto Popeye fight that we've all been waiting for. So it's ramping up, and I'm in.
And why isn't there a giant squid on the Universal attraction is my question.
Is there not?
Not that I know of.
No, I guess there isn't.
I
cannot wait to get back on. That squid's... What is great? You better say it's great.
No, not
great. It's got a very floppy head.
Yeah, he's a very floppy head and giant eyes. And like every time you touch it, it just deflates.
I know. Like, it's really, it has no weight to it at all.
They should have filmed it at night in a rainstorm.
Exactly. Yeah. These are the lessons that were learned many years before. But yeah, basically we have our big finale.
This is like the most cartoon scene though, because like you have like the fighting, the Popeye like zooming through the water, punching underwater, a very Pirates of the Caribbean sword fight going down. It's very, very cartoon.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. This is 100% a Popeye cartoon, like in 5-minute form.
Yeah.
And
Olive Oil
screams a lot. She is screaming a lot. But the eating of the spinach, the winding up of the hand, the punching the octopus into space, pretty much.
Yeah.
Bluto running away in a totally yellow suit. You know, he's turned yellow. Really good. And we get the classic Popeye song.
He's dancing on water.
He is. And you cannot see the platform he's walking on.
No, of course you cannot.
But yeah, so...
I feel like they filmed that in Hollywood studios, like on that set. Like,
show some respect.
The stage is right on the water.
No, I love it. I think it's a really good thing. Shelley Duvall is 100% in Olive Oil cartoon mode at that point, like with the, you know, the clasped hands behind next to the cheek as she like looks at him adoringly, like waving her hand and winking at him. It's so good. I love it.
She was in the pipe and the octopus's tentacles are like going around her legs. Like,
some of it fresh.
Yeah.
Fresh. So good. That's a phrase that doesn't exist anymore. Like,
no.
Getting fresh. Like, that doesn't mean that anymore.
It was good.
But yeah, she someone's getting fresh.
Oh, and we forgot to say what was in Pappy's treasure chest, which was.
Yeah, so the whole thing about like Bluto stealing the treasure and this and that, obviously they get it back eventually. They save the kid. Everyone winds up happy. But then they open the treasure chest, and it's all Popeye's like baby stuff.
Yeah, it's his like bronze shoes, little horn trumpet, a book on how to raise an orphan.
And what's step number one?
Step number one is feed it spinach.
Feed it spinach. It's good stuff.
And there's just tons of cans of spinach in there.
Yeah.
And the picture frame of my son. Which is, there's nothing in it. It's just it's
written.
Callback. Yep.
So, yeah, so everything pays off. Everything gets paid off, basically. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
So off yellow Bluto goes into the ocean. Popeye does his dance and his song, eventually walks right into the water And they even have the little, you know, circular edit, which stops on it. You get the little boop, boop, and that's the movie.
Yeah.
That's the movie.
That's Popeye.
It really moves quickly in that last 45 minutes. There's a little bit of, I felt there's a little bit of a lull in the middle, like the hour 10, hour 15 mark. And I would say that the first 20 minutes or so, yeah, you could shave it down probably to 10.
Yeah.
As much as I love
But he wanted that dinner scene.
Yeah. Well, you need the dinner scene. I think that's what you kind of, I don't know where you cut things off. Maybe it just doesn't take Popeye as long to get to the house. But that's, that
you know,
cuts,
I wonder if this
would have
been, because that last, the last 30 minutes is really truly a Popeye cartoon in and of it. Like it's canonized that way. If they had done two other short, like just basically combined two shorts, which you kind of get with the fighting scene or the derby scene, extend that somehow to make the and just put it together as like three shorts jammed together that tell an overarching story. I don't know if they would have had more success or not.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder. Especially because they take so long in the beginning, and maybe I don't know how people react to the beginning if they were like me where I was like, what is going on with the ADR stuff?
Well, like, maybe that was another consideration. They were like, you know what? We're going to take a little longer on this because there's going to be an adjustment period. There might be an adjustment period for an audience.
Yeah, you need to like bring them in.
Yeah. That's a possibility. I'm not sure. I'm not really too sure how accurate that is, but it's a possibility. So let's get to our three questions of the movie. Melissa, what are our three questions?
All right, we're going to ask if it still holds up. We're going to figure out, or attempt to figure out, what the iconic shot of the movie is.
Oh, there's an answer to that.
And we'll ask if there was an emotional or moral component to the film, and if it succeeded at doing either or neither.
So let's start with the moral one.
Okay.
I'll go with this. I think the moral is family forms love. I think that's pretty straightforward. And I actually think that it does do that. I think it does that successfully. I think that the way that the family loves each other, as much as they bicker, the oil family, they stand up for each other after sniping at each other, but they stand up for each other. Castor nearly gets himself murdered. Even Wimpy is sort of like part of that extended family, and the Undertaker, Giesel, is part of that extended family, and they all stick together when things go bad. Like, no one really runs out on the other one. And on the flip side of that, with Popeye, all of that pays off.
Yeah.
You know, him caring for the kid pays off in a way that, you know, you wouldn't, it, obviously in a cartoon sense, you know what happened. But, you know, it pays off in a well way, and he gets reunited with his father, and his father turns out to always have, you know, loved him. And I think that it actually does give up. I actually think it succeeds in its moral message. It's a simple one, but I don't think it's supposed to be very complicated. And I think that they actually do it.
Yeah, there was a line when Popeye was talking at the horse races, you know, about like everything. And he's like, you know, if he's a good guy, he's a good guy. If he's a bad guy, he's a bad guy. Like, he's just very, like, it's just very black and white. And I think, like,
it's like the cartoons.
Yeah, like, it's very, you know, it's very straightforward. It doesn't try to hide anything. But I think it does show you, you know, like, yeah, like, it's a cartoon. Good guys win, bad guys lose, and everyone is happy in the end.
Mr. Ryan Wilson.
I think it's a little. I see that whole point. The other piece is, I think there's a moral of, you know, different isn't bad.
Mm.
You know, you talk about how they've been under this like martial law, effectively, of Bluto and the Commodore, and they're terrified of Popeye, but he ends up being a positive force for that family, for the townsfolk, for everything that's going on. It's a bit stilted in how they deliver that message, but I think it gets across fairly clearly, you know, throughout the film.
No, yeah, I would agree.
That's
with
a good
that.
One,
yeah.
Yeah,
that's good. Yeah, that's very definitely set up in the opening, and then the acceptance of the townsmen, you know, townspeople later on in the film. I'd go with that. Yeah, iconic shot, Melissa.
I don't know. I feel like there's a few you could pick from.
Don't cheat. I want you looking at my screen.
I can't see your screen. Can I go last?
No. Ladies first. That's how that works.
Do
you want me to go? Do you want me to come back?
Yeah, please.
Okay, Ryan, how about you?
The image that stuck out from, if I remembered seeing it, you know, the faded memories I have of seeing it as a child, and it still holds this on, is in that fight with the in the restaurant where he is just like, you know, pounding the guy's face, just, and he had like his both fists wound up and the guy's face is just like rolling back in his head. That image is what sticks with me.
So that's my number two. That is, if I had a number two, that is my number two. My number one, I'm going with Popeye arm straight punching that octopus in the mush. The first one, when he like flies into him.
Yeah, that's, like torpedo. Yeah.
Yeah, that's my shot. But yeah, I specifically went to the scene you were just referring to, though, and my childhood remembers that scene the most. Mm-hmm. But I'll actually go with the punching the octopus in the face. So, Melissa.
I don't know. This was my first time seeing this movie. The part that stuck out to me the most, and I don't know if it's just because it was like kind of the most colorful, and maybe something that I remember from the cartoon, but just the shot of Popeye, Olive Oil, and Sweet Pea like on the boat, like where they're discussing the name of the baby.
Okay.
Like, and you know, Popeye's got the baby and stuff, like just that three little family shot.
Okay.
Stuck out.
Go with
me.
That. I thought you were going to go with the red. I thought that's where you were going with that one.
No. I like the one go there on the boat because it's like there's blues happening and the green of the water. Like it's just very, I don't know. It's brighter than any other part of that movie. And maybe because like the beginning when everything's kind of like dreary and Popeye's not being very accepted and Olive Oil's in a whole conflict with what to do with Bluto. And then like you have this shot it's of arch. The three of them and like they're the happy family and like color is kind of like nicely well done in that shot. I don't know.
All right, so we let you go third on that. You're gonna go first on this. Does it hold up?
I mean, I think we all got enjoyment out of it. I think it does because, like, you know, while the makeup might be weird, I think it's on purpose. Like, you know, like the very obvious fight makeup, or like I think his forearms look fine. Like they don't look really weird. Like
the final one, they make him look ridiculously gigantic when he punches out of the
spinach.
Water. Yeah, I know.
That's what happens. He gets bigger muscles when he eats spinach. Come on now.
Looks uncomfortable.
Come on now.
Yes.
But no, I think it does hold up. I think there's some pacing issues, but I don't think it detracts from the overall.
Ryan Wilson.
Yes.
What do you think? You think it holds up?
So the argument that I made for Happiest Millionaire, where I thought there was a better version of this movie, like trimmed down to 2 hours, I think there's like a better movie if you just watch like the last 45 minutes here. The different audio sources, it throws me a bit. It's not the crosstalk. I don't mind the crosstalk. Robert Altman, I love a lot of his movies. But the way that the ADR was done in this one, it throws me a bit. And then the fact that it was a musical, I think they could have not made it a musical and made it more effective, or only cut the songs in half. For me, it doesn't hold up.
So I'm gonna actually, this is a weird question when I say it, it's like, does it hold up? And it's like, well, it didn't hold up when it was put out initially. It was a very split movie, but I'm gonna say that it holds up. I do think it would greatly benefit from losing 20-25 minutes, which would put it at about an hour and a half. And I think that that's a lot better. Or just slightly under an hour and a half, like 80-85 minutes. I think that's the length of this movie.
Because it needs to be like an animated length film. And
yeah.
Even though it's not animated.
Yeah. And there's a lot. You know, it takes a little while to get to the better parts, which is, you know, Sweet Pea on. And then you can even in there maybe like trim a little bit here, a little bit there.
Yeah.
But actually, I think it does. I think it's got a really odd, quirky sense of humor that is not based on a time frame. It's just odd, quirky sense of humor. You know, it doesn't matter if you listen to it you saw it in the 80s or now. It's not basing itself on any specific culture where it's like, oh, I remember that thing. That was a funny thing. So I think that the comedy really, really works. The audio is a bit of a hiccup. I understand the style of Altman, but it's sometimes a little too difficult in this one, especially when there is so many good jokes said kind of under the surface.
The under the breath puns, or even sometimes the visual puns, like that really was hysterical.
But I think it holds up. The look, it's got a solid look. The town looks good. It's has some weird cutaway shots. That would be maybe my biggest thing against it. But
yeah.
I think it holds up. I had a good time with it. And I might look into purchasing it. I really might. I don't know what format. I might.
I'll tell you this. The difference on Amazon
right now.
It was
a dollar.
It's a dollar. Between renting it and buying it was a dollar. And so it's probably worth the investment of the dollar.
I should have just bought it yesterday. I don't know why I didn't. I was like, I don't know. I rented it. I was like, this is a stupid idea. I should have just bought this damn thing. But yeah, I think it holds up. So let us know what you think. Head over to that Facebook page, Disney Magic Hour, and let us know what you think about Popeye. And do we know what's next? We're in the 80s.
Oh, the good movies. I think we're up to the tearjerker, Fox and the Hound soon.
Are we?
I know we're getting close. So I'm like dreading
it. That's an 81, so I know we're getting close. But there might be one or two before it, depending on.
Walt Disney.
Let's just go to the list.
Yeah, let's go to the list. Let's let everyone know. I'm excited.
Let's go to the list. See.
Well, it depends. No, so there's The Devil and Max Devlin.
What?
Which is, that's a Bill Cosby.
We'll skip some Bill Cosby stuff, I think.
And then there's also Dragon Slayer.
Oh, we'll do Dragon Slayer next,
right,
obviously.
The other part of this duo.
Guys, Dragon Slayer, Fox and the Hound, Condor Man, and Tron. That's the next four movies. Are you kidding me? Come on. Then Something Wicked This Way Comes, Return to Oz, Black Cauldron.
We're doing Return to Oz?
Yes, we're doing Return to Oz. It's one of the reasons I made this show. What, are you kidding me? Are we doing Return to Oz? You may as well ask me, are we going to review Aladdin? The answer is yes.
No.
Journey of Natty Gann, The Great Mouse Detector, Flight of the Navigator. Like, there's a good list here.
We got Beach Boys coming up. Round, round, get around. Ever remember that from Flight of the Navigator?
Nope. I know the song, but I don't know from
that
movie.
Have you ever seen Flight of the Navigator?
Nope. This is the time where I haven't seen a lot of these movies. I've seen The Fox and the Hound, and I think that's it. I've never seen Black Cauldron. I've never seen Great Mouse Detective. There's a lot in here I haven't seen.
So much. It's a whole new world.
That's the 90s.
Nope. It's right now. That's what's right now. It's happening. All right, guys and gals, thank you so much for tuning in this week. We'll see you in a couple, and we'll return with Dragon Slayer. Is it Peter McNichols?
We'll find out.
Is that his name?
I don't know.
I think that's his name. Till next week, say ha. Whoa, wait a minute. That's the wrong way of doing things.
That is.
Till next week, say goodnight, Melissa.
Goodnight, Melissa.
Or goodbye. What do I usually say?
You could do goodnight.
Yes, goodnight. Say goodnight, Ryan.
Goodnight, Ryan.
Goodnight, Pete. Goodnight, Shelley Duvall.